certain item, please 953.
Report on recent audit work from the City Auditor, Portland's financial condition, risk management, tree code.
Auditor Mary Hull Caballero is here today to introduce the report. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I am City Auditor Mary Hull Caballero, and I am here today with Senior Management Auditors Christine Adams-Wanberg, Kari Guy, and Martha Prinz.
Welcome.
Madam Auditor, can I ask you a question?
Sure. Is this the first time under this mayor where you've come forward with a comprehensive suite of presentations on audits?
Yes, and I was going to address why.
Oh, no. Well, I wanted to applaud you for doing so, but I don't want to steal your thunder.
Okay.
Thank you.
It has not been the practice of the auditor's office to speak to council as a group about our audit findings and recommendations, and this presentation changes that. My hope is that commissioners in charge of bureaus that are the subject of our audits take our results in the spirit in which we intend them, which is for the city to become more effective, efficient, and equitable. We also hope to use these opportunities to highlight themes across audits that can apply to operations and programs, whether or not they are the subject of any particular audit. And we have the results from three audits to present today. We're going to talk about the city's financial condition, risk management, and the implementation of the tree code. And we're going to begin with the financial condition audit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mayor and Commissioners, for the record, my name is Christine Adams-Wanberg, and I'm with the Audit Services Division of the elected City of the Auditor's Office. I want to cover just a couple of things about the city's financial condition report. This is a report that we typically do every 2 years. It's basically a high-level report to look at trends in citywide indicators. It's essentially trying to take our CAFR document, which is this thick, and to turn it into something like this, which is kind of fun. There are other jurisdictions that do this type of report, so it's fairly common in our area. The information comes from the city's audited CAFR. It's really intended for a broad audience. In this particular one, we did not have recommendations. Sometimes we produce recommendations in them, sometimes we don't. So a couple things I wanted to highlight in terms of things that we saw that were really good for the city in terms of our financial indicators. We have a very diverse revenue sources, which is excellent for our city. We have very good bond ratings, and our liquidity is in very good shape, as you'll see from the information on the slides. Over the last couple years, our property taxes grew 8%. Now, these were the property taxes that actually came to the city. This is not all the property taxes that go to the county and all the other jurisdictions. But they grew from 8% between 2012 and 2016. But one of the things that we noted is for the money that is coming to us, the property tax dollars, for each property tax dollar, less than half of that is actually going to the general fund now. That's the same as it was 5 years ago, but we have noticed over a 10-year time trend that is actually shrinking. Another thing that I wanted to highlight, and this is something that has been brought up to you at various other times, is if you look at the condition of our city's assets, our utility assets, our water and sewer, are really in pretty good shape. About 69% are deemed in good shape, but our transportation assets are tend to be failing. Now, please note that the information that we put in this document was actually before the new gas tax went in, so we're hoping in 2 years when we come back to you with our next report that we'll see an impact of that, that the transportation assets are in better condition. The last thing that I wanted to highlight is our net position. Now, net position is essentially everything you owe minus everything, or everything you own minus everything you owe. So all the assets minus all your liabilities. And what we like to see in this is that your net position is basically increasing over time. And that's what we're seeing for basically our utility net position. We're investing in our infrastructure, and our net position is going up due to that investment in our capital assets. The general government net position, so this would be for services such as transportation, parks, police, administration, those are going down. And this is primarily because of our FPD and our liability. One thing we did want to note is we have seen some encouraging changes from the Office of Management and Finance. In our previous report, we had asked them to do more information provision to you, to give you more information with a popular annual financial report, as well as coming to you every year to give you an update on what's going with the city's financial position, and they have been doing that, so we are encouraged by that. And with that, I would like to turn it over for the risk audit.
Next up, City Risk. I'm Kari Guy with the Auditor's Office.
Morning.
Morning. So City Risk is a division of the Office of Management and Finance, and they're charged with they monitor and coordinate citywide safety programs. They also manage all workers' comp claims and general liability claims for the city, and they purchase insurance for the city. We audited two of those programs, their safety and loss prevention and their liability claims management. The city auditor has suggested that reports aren't always the most readable, and so this is our first attempt at a video to explain our audit results.
Our audit found that the city needs a more proactive approach to safety and loss prevention, but that claim management usually works well. Portland's Risk Management Division spends almost $16 million each year to help city bureaus reduce injuries and loss and to manage and pay claims against the city if an incident occurs. This audit found that risk management does not follow the city loss prevention requirements to establish safety goals and benchmarks, develop a model loss prevention plan, and help bureaus develop plans that address their safety issues, provide information on injury and accident trends, or report to council on loss prevention activities and results. At the same time, worker injuries at the City of Portland increased 15% from 2012 to 2016. Without a central focus from risk management, city council and bureaus may not have the information they need to develop safety programs and to budget for and prioritize emerging risks. When an incident occurs and a claim is filed against the city, risk management usually manages those claims well, but lacks a consistent approach. Most people who filed claims with risk management in the past 2 years were positive about the service they received, but some reported long delays and unclear decisions. Risk management recently implemented a new information system, and better use of the system features, like scheduled tasks, could help ensure claims are resolved consistently and on time. We recommend risk management establish a proactive, citywide approach to loss prevention and update its claims management procedures. To view the full report, go to portlandoregon.gov/audit services.
So there are a few issues that may require sort of council decisions or more attention that we didn't completely cover in the video, so I want to highlight a few things. One you saw in the video that the city does have adopted code and policy around how to have this sort of centralized risk management function. And a lot of that has kind of fallen by the wayside, and risk no longer follows that code. Our recommendation to them was either to follow the code or to come back to you with what their preferred approach is. And they said they will come back to you with code changes. So keep an eye out.
Could you add a couple of sentences of why we fell away from what was established code?
I am not sure. There were staffing changes. I think it's been a long time since, there are some bureaus who still sort of actively do the planning required, but not all, and risk management does not.
And what is their time frame for coming back to City Council with an alternative code?
They did not tell us in the management letter. The second issue is around their information system. Risk management purchased a new information system in 2013. It was implemented in 2013. And one of the primary goals of that system was to provide access to data to all the Bureau safety managers, so for Water Bureau, Parks, so that they could get access to injury data and safety, like general liability claims. Risk management has not provided that access, and we recommend that they do. What bureau managers tell us is that they would like to be able to identify trends for their bureaus. They'd like to be able to build business cases if they need safety improvements to be able to look at the costs of these injuries. It was pretty consistent from all the bureaus we talked to. Sorry. That they believe it would improve their internal safety programs if they had access to this data. Risk is concerned that they want the data to be perfect before they share it, and they're learning a new system. The argument, I think, for sharing now is that probably Environmental Services is the best one to know if Environmental Services data is correct, and having more eyes on it sooner.
Is there a precedent?
Well, so we got access to the system to do our review, and they are able to constrain what we're able to see in terms of personally identifiable information. I think they could qualify the data that they share.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And third up are...
Can we switch out, maybe?
You just did.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Okay. That would be loud.
Maybe just while she's talking, could you swap that mic? Because those are better for some reason. I agree with Nick. Those little ones, they're a little flimsier.
So third up is the $5,000 limit.
Is that better? Is that better? Okay, yeah, everybody says yes. Okay.
The city charter requires that council approve all claims over $5,000 by ordinance. That sounds really loud, but okay. When we reviewed liability claim files, we saw some cases that were over $5,000 that did not come to council. And there's two situations where this happened. One was in a car accident, so say a city truck hits a car. Risk would pay up to $5,000 for the medical costs and up to $5,000 for the damage to the vehicle. So you could have a payment up to $10,000 and it's not coming to city council. Similarly, if it's a jointly owned property, there's damage to a home, say, damage up to $10,000, they will pay $5,000 to each of the homeowners. So again, $10,000 is not coming in front of council. We talked to Risk, and they said this has been the practice as long as they can remember, but it is not written down anywhere. So our recommendation to them was that they sort of get your approval for this approach, if this is the right approach, so that the scope of claims that are covered that come before council is clear. And I guess lastly, that $5,000 limit was set in 1976, I think, in charter, and it's not indexed to inflation. So over time, you're just going to see more and more claims. It's in charter, but it might be an issue for a future charter review to look at if $5,000 is still the right level and if it should be indexed to inflation.
I could use some more clarity on how it's supposed to work. So if there's a claim of more than $5,000 and they rule against the claimant, does that come to city council?
No. You only see the ones where they pay claims.
Is it supposed to?
No.
Is it supposed to be heard by a committee or a commission?
No. Risk management has the authority to respond to claims. There's one example that came out, I think, this week from the ombudsman around fair and moral claims.
Yes.
And in that case, those are supposed to be heard by a committee, and that has not been done.
And do you know why or when?
I do not.
That practice fell by the wayside?
I do not.
Okay. I'd like to know.
I would just add that I think that is another example of where internal practice inside risk management has kind of superseded code and charter provisions. And what the ombudsman was trying to bring to our attention is that was done without some sort of affirmative acknowledgement by council, and that it really is just to create awareness for the people who would sit on that committee, and I would be one of those people, that we do have this option to address some of those issues.
And what claims would rise to that being heard by that committee?
You know, I'm not an expert on the fair and moral claims, so I'm hesitant to say much more.
Well, I won't take up everyone's time here, but I would like to know more about it, and I guess I'll contact.
I would be happy to talk to you about that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Martha Prince, for the record, and auditor.
Can we stay on risk management
sure.
for a moment?
I'm sorry. I thought you were
done. Auditor, I have a couple of questions I want to ask you.
Okay.
And the first question is going to seem incredibly obvious, but, you know, I have learned that I need to ask this question in order to make sure we're all on the same page. Who is the client when risk management does its work? Who is the client?
I view risk management, when it comes to the claims part of their responsibilities, as operating like an insurance company in a way. That a claim comes in, they do an assessment of whether it should be paid or not. And if it's over $5,000, that information comes to you. If not, if it's denied, that information, it's my understanding, does not come to you either, as you ask Commissioner Udaly. And so the city is the client.
And because in your summary there's a reference to the fact that our system is somewhat inconsistent, and that I think at least in part has to do with our form of government, do you believe that greater bureau oversight of risk management on a bureau-by-bureau basis has the potential to address some of these structural problems, or does it have the risk of exacerbating those structural problems?
You know, I think that this is another example, and I had said in my introduction that there are themes across audits. This strikes me as a theme that we see over and over again, where a centralized bureau will have great responsibility and little authority to ask bureaus to do certain things. And this may fall into one of those kinds of situations where there needs to be some thoughts around how much authority should risk management have over bureaus and how much of it should actually be decentralized, where the bureaus are making those decisions and risk is a support system to their decision making.
And I appreciate the way you just framed that, because we've been with my bureaus, the utilities, we've been struggling with what is that balance. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, we want the utilities to be accountable, so monitoring risk, managing risk in a thoughtful way, you know, using taxpayer dollars wisely. At the same time, risk management has a set of prescribed responsibilities. Right. And it's not completely apparent how you harmonize those two. And I think one of the virtues of this audit is at a very high level, you sort of tease that out. And I think it does require further conversations through OMF in particular to see how do we find that sweet spot.
I agree, and I think that is part of our decision to start bringing our audit results to council, is because we tend to focus on the commissioner in charge of a particular or whoever the auditee is, the commissioner in charge. We don't often have the opportunity to speak to all of you as a group about these things, and I'm hoping that this is the kind of conversation that can raise these issues up to your level and that you all can decide how you want that balance to be struck.
And auditor, because the mayor was not here for another variation of this a couple years ago, I also hope that we from time to time schedule work sessions with an audit, because I think while this is enormously helpful and this broadcasts to the broader public and gets out the sort of thematics, we've had some hugely successful work sessions where we've drilled down on a particular problem and you have framed the problem through either a specific audit of an issue or a theme. And I actually think that we would benefit from doing that more frequently.
We'd be happy to do that.
And with regard to, while we're on the risk management piece, at least tangentially, the fair and moral claims piece, the chief administrative officer is actually waiting for direction from the council on that. So that is a conversation I think we need to continue.
Okay.
Good.
Will the chief administrative officer be coming around to ask each of us our opinion?
I'll make sure that happens.
Okay, ready for trees? So I'll start again. My name is Martha Prince, and I'm an auditor in the auditor's office, and I was the auditor in charge of this particular audit. And this presentation is a bit of a teaser for you because the audit has not actually been released yet, but knowing that we have this session planned, we thought we'd just go ahead and put it on the agenda and speak about it. And just so you know, it's scheduled to be released next Wednesday, which is September 6th. As you know, the tree code was adopted in 2011, but implementation was delayed until January of 2015 due to budget constraints. So it's really just been 2 years that we've had the tree code. It's really the city's first comprehensive set of rules about trees consolidated in one place, and it applies to more trees than previous regulations did. Parks, specifically the Urban Forestry Division and the Bureau of Development Services, were the auditees because they are the primary bureaus implementing the code, although the code affects all the bureaus and everybody in the city, but that's where our focus was. And for this audit, we focused on trees on private property and street trees. Okay, sorry. So moving to results, I just want to, again, caution you, there's only 2 years of data, so these should not be considered definitive results or the final word on the tree code, and more time will definitely be needed to fully assess how well the code is working. It's also worth noting that there was not a lot of data for the pre-tree code years for us to compare to. So here in this first graph, we compared data from 2015 to data from 2016, And although we didn't look at everything, we generally found that improved tree protection in development from 1 year to the next, as seen here. So, for example, this particular graph shows more trees were preserved in residential demolitions in 2016 than in 2015, and that a smaller percentage of demolitions involves someone paying fees instead of preserving trees as required. And in the second graph here on the right, we see a non-development example, which generally in non-development we saw somewhat less positive results. So, for example, here we see that for every 9 trees planted, 10 trees were removed in both 2015 and 2016 in non-development.
Could you give us some examples of non-development
situations? Sure. So non-development, the best example, just to simplify, is something you do at your house which doesn't involve ground disturbance. So you could be, expanding your kitchen but not disturbing the ground, and that might trigger something in the tree code for non-development. You might be doing so, or you might want to just remove a tree, and it's over a certain size, generally 12 inches, and that's non-development. And you're not removing the tree because you're going to add an ADU. You just would like more light and space in your house, in your
All
yard.
Right.
So
helpful.
Things like
Thanks.
That.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. And so both development services and parks, urban forestry are facing increased workloads, and it's worth noting that's not just because of the tree code. Development permits of all types, not just those that trigger tree-related requirements, are up. And so here what we see is non-development permit applications, which involved urban forestry, which is the green line there on the graph, increased by 51% from 2014 to 2016. And then in the blue line, we see development permit reviews by urban forestry increased by 64% from 2014 to 2016. And so in this one case, we're obviously seeing, you know, we have 1 year of data, which is before the tree code went into effect. An example of the impact of the workload issue is urban forestry doesn't routinely check for compliance that street trees were planted in non-development situations. And they also don't routinely check for compliance with street tree planting rules in the case of smaller development projects. They do respond to complaints, but they're not routinely going out and making sure that what happened with street tree planting took place. So Development Services has a pretty outdated permitting software known as TRAX, and it's been an ongoing challenge to get that upgraded, and it affects the tree code in a number of ways. And just one example of a problem with the current permitting system is that real-time information about trees or development projects isn't available in the field. And that would be very useful to have when you're out there and you want to see the history. So it's an efficiency issue in that case. So this past year, Development Services and the Bureau of Technology Services relaunched stalled efforts to upgrade the system. And even though it's a permitting system, it's worth noting that urban forestry would like the new system to include some kind of asset management component so that they're able to track individual trees as assets. As you know, as council members, the city has many plans and priorities. For example, housing affordability, equity, and the tree code should work in concert with those efforts. To give you just a few examples, it's hard to see, but the map on the left shows that the tree canopy isn't equitably distributed, and that there are some aspects of the tree code which help perpetuate that. The tree code can also be expensive for homeowners to comply with, and there are many other things we could discuss, but just letting you know there are some issues with the tree code that may be in conflict with other things the council's trying to achieve.
Can I just acknowledge?
Sure.
I want to say thank you for calling that out, because there is really a tension, particularly as we go further east, where mm-hmm. we want to make new investments in our tree canopy. But when we go to some homeowners and say, would you like a tree in the right-of-way?
Right. Yeah.
They're also taking on a liability, mm-hmm. a potential liability. And we're going to have to crack that nut if we're going to make progress on equity, because it just doesn't seem fair that we would put the tree in and then tag someone down the road with repairing their sidewalk or whatever the fallout.
Right. And they may have other more pressing concerns. So it's just something to think about. And the document on the right has been described to us by Urban Forestry as the city's vision for trees and the mission statement for trees. It's called the Urban Forestry Management Plan, and it's due for an update since it was last updated in 2004 and is meant to be updated every 10 years. Obviously, a lot's changed in the city since 2004 as far as development pressures and other issues and other priorities. So we think the plan should be updated before any substantial changes are made to the tree code. Finally, here are some considerations for you going forward as elected officials, and these are reflected in our audit recommendations. We think that you should continue to use Bureau-provided data and analysis to continue to assess the effectiveness of the tree code and inform your decision-making as you go forward. Address workload challenges as appropriate. Determine the funding level for the new permitting system. And finally, ensure that the tree code and other city plans and priorities are in alignment with each other. Again, the audit will be out next week, and we'll provide you with more information as well as more detailed analysis and recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you.
I particularly appreciated the finding in the tree audit that staff in urban forestry have been working really hard and need more support. So that obviously becomes a council discussion as both fees and also general fund allocations, whereas development services can use permit fees. So that was a particularly helpful piece of your audit. Commissioner, you'd remember we're going to later in a few months come back. The work group that we established between bureaus has been working on the issue of street trees. So my position has been I'll take whatever the council wants to do to work on first. I'm more than happy to do it. And we do need to do the amendments. We've got a list of dozens of them. We've got the Urban Forestry Management Plan that's outdated. We agree with that. And then also we thought, when we had the discussion earlier this year, that starting with the street tree piece, for the very reason that Commissioner Fish pointed out, might be a way to bite off a manageable piece. I'm not quite sure that it's going to turn out that way, because it's if with the responsibility was to shift to the government, that would be very expensive and would have to figure out a way to do that. So thank you very much. It was a very helpful audit.
Welcome. Thank you.
Very good. Does that complete the formal presentation?
That concludes our presentation.
We lost the council clerk.
Well, I have a few questions,
yeah, please,
Mayor, and I'm actually not certain that this is the best time to raise them. I think I might need to speak to staff as well. But first of all, thank you for these reports. I find them really helpful, and even though one of my bureaus got called out, I don't mind at all, because I'm actually really excited to talk to them about adding an asset management component to our new permitting system, which is somewhere near launching. I tried to confirm that on the fly, but couldn't. So I am worried about this conflict between affordable housing and our urban canopy. And there's many points in the report where that's called out. Do you have anything additional to say about that? Because it's certainly, if there is a conflict, and I don't think it is an either-or question, that's something that we need to resolve, because chances are, where we're building affordable housing, we have a deficient urban canopy to begin with. Any thoughts on that?
Commissioner, we would consider that a policy decision,
yeah,
and that is in your lane.
Yes.
And I think we'll stay in our accountability lane on that.
Okay.
And just acknowledge that it's a very difficult conflict.
Yeah.
That will take some additional research and thinking from a policy perspective to resolve it.
So the purposes of this report, you're not going to advise on any kind of technical or policy change. You're just simply letting us know how it's working and if we're complying with existing code.
Correct. We wanted to look at how implementation was going and report back to you.
Okay.
So that you could take some action if needed.
Well, I think all of these questions are more along those lines, so I guess I'll save them for a future conversation.
Okay.
Thanks.
Very good. Is there any public testimony on this item?
Yes, we have four people signed up.
Very good.
The first three are Mimi Gurman, Star Stauffer, and Joe Walsh.
Good morning, Mr. Walsh. Would you like to start?
No, I'm going to defer.
My name is Mimi Gurman. I'm so tired of being here. I'm so tired of the city that pretends to work that doesn't work. Audits. We have audits. What are we talking about today? We're talking about... We're talking about handicap accessibility. We are the people. We're talking about Nazi cops. We're talking about cops in elementary schools. We're talking about risk management. Nick Fish, you wanted to know more about risk management. I'm gonna share some things that I feel about risk management and what needs to be audited that wasn't spoken about today, and maybe you guys could ask the auditors about that. Risk management, auditing. This is a terrible picture because I don't have a lot of money to buy a new printer. This is a Portland police cop with two kids from elementary school with this new program that cops should be in elementary school, scaring kids into liking cops who come after them to hurt them. They put these two kids in riot gear. The kids are holding a billy club. This is the Portland fucking police department.
Okay, I would have to ask again. This is televised. We have an FCC license.
This is the Portland police department.
Clean. Thank you.
Dealing with kids, scaring children into liking them. Where is the accountability here for the deaths in Portland by police? Where's the accountability regarding Kruger, Nazi cop Kruger, not being fired? Where's the audit on the bullets before the $4 million went to the cops again? Where was that audit? I asked for that audit back, and I got thrown out for it, too. I asked for that audit when we were over in the Portland building before anybody gave money for more bullets, when that cop who came in to ask for $2 to $4 million said, we ran out early. Where's the audit on that? Where's the outrage on that? Where's the outrage on this when you talk about risk management? What kind of risk management is this? I'm serious. What kind of risk management is this? Where is the management of risk? We talk about loss prevention. Let's talk about Qantas Hayes. Where's the loss prevention from that life lost by cops? All of this ties in. We're the only ones talking about it who come here. People come here and we use the words resist. I'm tired of resisting. I've been resisting a long freaking time. It's time to turn these tables over and fix this stuff. It's time to stand up and say, we're not going to tolerate this anymore, because this is not risk management. This is risk. This is creating risk in neighborhoods that are poor. This is creating risk in neighborhoods that have black and brown kids in them. And we sit here and talk about trees. I love
you.
Trees.
Thank you.
I want trees.
Good morning.
I want trees.
Excuse me, your time is up. Please sit down. Excuse me. I'm sorry, you're interrupting testimony. You're interrupting testimony. We're in recess.
You're